Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you an important question. When was the last time you encountered an angel? I mean, one of those etheric angels from beyond or from within. We don't really know where that's from, other than it's not in our normal daily routines. So it's really important for us to appreciate that these angels do show up and they do offer great help. It may be insights, maybe healing. They're very important. And they've been around for a long time. And it's not the first time anyone's heard of angels. So we're going to talk about a great new book called Angels, Personal Encounters with Divine Beings of Light. And the ideal person to have written this book has been on Energy Stew many times. She's written many books, and she's certainly an angel herself, Tricia McCannon. Tricia, welcome back to Energy Stew.
Peter, thank you. It is always such a pleasure to be with you. We always have deep, meaningful conversations, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, I love you. I love all of your books. They've always been amazing. And this one, you know, is really about a lot of who you are, because angels have always been a big part of your life. And so you've taken that and expanded into how it's an important part of many other people's lives, and historically too.
It's totally true. And in fact, you know, because we have done the shows, this is my fifth book. And my very first book was Dialogues with Angels, which actually I start off talking about how angels began to teach me when I was 8 years old. And as you know, I had a book, my last book before this one is called The Angelic Origins of the Soul, which is talking about the purity of who each one of us is and how we come down through the dimensions to eventually become human beings and what the course curriculum is while we're down here. And this book, this newest book that just came out, is this one is actually with Sacred Stories Publishing. And you can go to their website, sacredstories.com, or mine, or Amazon, or, you know, Barnes and Noble. But this is Angels, Personal Encounters with Divine Beings of Light. And this one is it's a different kind of book. You know, in a lot of my other books, I've taken my experiences and woven a lot of history and grounded information around the stories, which were true stories of masters and angels and mysticism and higher dimensional experiences. This one is in three sections. The first section has about six chapters, which I wrote, and the last section has about six chapters, which includes actually a guided meditation and also ways that you can connect with your own guides. But the center section has stories from, I think it's 29 other people who have had modern day encounters with angels themselves. And the stories are not long. They're 2, 3, 4 pages a piece, but it's just one right after the other telling us that they're just as active today, those angels, as they were 2000 years ago when the Bible was written.
And it's amazing how angels show up and what they're here for, and how they've affected these people's lives so dramatically in such different ways.
It's true. You know, most of us that would like to have an encounter, we'd like them to manifest physically in our living room with lights and glory and big old wings and stuff. But, you know, part of the mandate for angels is to allow human beings to experience free will without interference. So the first thing is, if you want to work with them, you have to invite them in. And, you know, they work within the light. So I always say, because it's a multidimensional world and universe, and there might be a lot of beings interested in you, you always want to set your energy field by calling in a column of white gold light from the highest, you know, what you want to think of it as the central sun or the Christ energy or the Buddhic energy or the Divine Mother energy. Pull it over you, ground it like a column of protection, ground it down into the earth. call in your own personal guides, and then put out an invitation to masters or angels or whoever you want to work with. Think of it like a tea party. And so in particular with angels, because they can't interfere with free will, they must be invited in, and they will come. And you may experience them as a touch on your shoulder, as a smell. They smell like baby powder. It smells funny, but they do. They have that really sweet, fresh smell. You may experience them as just a sense of peace coming over you at the heart level or the energy level. There are all sorts of stories about people who, like a guy, you know, in the middle of the night who's running out of gas in, you know, a 50-mile stretch with no gas station, and suddenly a car appears with these, you know, beings like in white outfits and a white car, and they help him and say, basically rescue him, and then suddenly vanish. There's a story about someone who has a death. I think her husband dies, and she is in just deep grief in the hospital, and suddenly this nurse appears and delivers this message and then just vanishes, and no one's ever heard of that nurse. There's another one in the hospital with a child that's sick, and no matter what they do, they can't bring the fever down. And in the night, this nurse comes in, and the mother's asleep in the chair and wakes up and never seen the nurse before, never seen her since. And the nurse gives the child something that's like a, you know, appears to be candy or something. And the next morning, the child's totally well. And so, and they had given up hope. So the stories are, obviously, these high vibrating energy beings, when they need to, they can slow the atoms of their vibrating bodies down in order to manifest in a human form, whether it's as a man or a woman or a child or an old person, when needed. But of course, that's not the normal state that they walk around in. They are in service to the souls that are incarnated here in the third dimension, but most of them are not living in a third dimensional body most of the time. They really exist at the higher frequencies, and their job is to serve the divine and to serve the evolutionary awakening of all beings everywhere.
Well, I think we live in a much more flexible universe of dimensions than ever before. I think there's so much more opportunity for us to connect with the other side, and the other side to connect with us. And I think probably the more profound these angels are, the more abilities they have to do what's needed.
It's interesting because, you know, for many thousands of years, science, philosophy, and spirituality were in a triangle, and they corroborated one another. And then really when the church or religion became so heavy-handed, they disengaged themselves from science and even philosophy. The Neoplatonists, for example, were philosophy, science, and spirituality. So were the great mystery schools. So for many centuries, the church, I think, in an effort to try to push forth their agenda, did not let people know about science. And in fact, people right. who were pursuing science were persecuted.
And Galileo is one of them, who was told, hey, you know, do all the science you want, but when it comes to anything esoteric, we're going to put you in jail. And they did.
They did. And Giorgio Bruno in 1500 AD was burned at the stake for saying that life could exist on other planets, you know, as if we were the only inhabited planet. So it wasn't until the Renaissance that finally science began to find a niche. And the only way it was allowed to exist was to say, I have nothing to do with spirituality, nothing to do with the soul. No, I'm just saying, if you look through this telescope, you'll see a moon up there in the sky. Okay, I'm not saying it means anything. Okay.
Right.
But now we're in an age where finally science and spirituality and philosophy are starting to come back together. And we can really thank quantum physics for that, which has been around in our knowledge base for about 100 years. And people like Brian Greene and Michio Kaku and some of the other quantum physicists who are, Irvin Laszlo is another brilliant one who writes books about how the first principle, you know, that Thoth talked about was that the universe is conscious and that we can interact through our consciousness with the universe. And of course, the angels are conscious beings, and they're beings who are maybe not dealing with the same complications that we are with our crazy emotional bodies and physical and sexual and financial problems and all the things that we deal with on Earth, but they are plugged in. They're totally plugged in to the music of the spheres, to the divine plan, and to absolute divine loving service.
And what's fascinating is that they appear to us often in forms that are hard to comprehend. They show up, thinking of, for instance, George Washington. The way the angel, and I guess it was one angel, showed up to him was very mystical. But people don't understand that he was a meditator. He was somebody who really was highly spiritual to begin with.
He was, you know, I have a chapter, there's many amazing chapters in this book. And one of the chapters, because I am a historian as well as a mystic, wanted to really share these powerful, profound stories with people about famous people's encounters with angels that have really essentially changed the world. George Washington's, we'll talk about his first, in 1777, after the Constitution had been ratified in 1776, we were still fighting the British. And we didn't know if we were going to win. And George Washington spent a really bleak winter at Valley Forge, where his men were, you know, starving to death. And he was like in the dark night of the soul. And he would often go out and pray. And as you say, pray and meditate. Meditating is more the listening part, and praying is more the phone conversation out to the divine. And he had this experience in his tent where this female, gorgeous female angel appeared, and then a male angel appeared. And
I don't remember. I just remember. I guess I was captivated by the female when I read about it.
Well, she was beautiful. And she's the one who kept saying, you know, basically, listen, you know, hearken to these words. And basically, she said that our country would prevail, that we would face three great crises. The first was the Revolutionary War. The second one was the Civil War. And the third one, she said, is yet to come. And it's one where it will look like pretty much World War III, but where the forces will be arrayed against the United States. But that even though in the darkest hour, when it looked like we would fail, there would be this beacon of light. Now, you can think of it as a solar mass ejection. You can think of it as a, let us say, an informational beam from the great central sun that comes through our own sun, but that will literally flood the earth, and people will awaken out of the chaos and division that we see happening all around us now, in society, in so many different countries, and certainly in our own. And literally this wave of peace would come over the entire planet. And these angels appeared to say that democracy and freedom would prevail. So that we must just always hold that vision and work towards that end, but that it was meant to endure in this country that was, of course, set up by the Freemasons, who were very enlightened people at that time. You know, the Freemasons now may or may not have passed on those secrets, but, you know, 250 years ago, these were spiritually evolved beings. And, you know, George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin, and people who had managed to bring the wisdom of the mystery schools together with the wisdom of Jesus's teachings and brought them into the humanitarian principles of democracy. And that's how America got set up. So one of the other stories in that chapter is another one that I love. It's
about cosmonauts, right?
The cosmonauts, yes. In 1985, there were three Russian cosmonauts, and later three more joined them. So a total of six, where they actually looked out the window of their space station. And in the first instant, they saw this kind of orange light reflected in the space station on the metal. And they're like, what's that? You know, is something on fire outside? And they looked out the window and they saw these angels. They described them as large as 747 airplanes with wingspans as large. And they were, I think there were six of the angels.
I guess they wanted to make an impression. I don't think they have to be that big. I think they chose to be that big.
And they literally turned and looked at the cosmonauts that were, of course, flabbergasted looking out the window. And all of these had been raised, all these cosmonauts had been raised behind the Iron Curtain. This is when the Soviet Union pretty much was in charge. So they were all atheists. They hadn't been raised like in the church or in the temples or, you know, the mosque.
They weren't into angels at the time.
No, they were scientists, pure scientists. And then three more came and joined them. And the following week, all six cosmonauts, the angels reappeared. And again, they turned and smiled at the cosmonauts. So like you say, I'm sure they were totally aware of what they were doing. And of course, the Soviet Union suppressed this, but there was a Russian scientist that defected to America and he brought this account with him. And this is how we happen to know what occurred, which I just loved that story. It was a great story, huh?
Right. But to those of us who appreciate angels, it doesn't surprise us. You know, we just don't know when they're going to do their thing.
Well, you know, we can invite them, but it is part of the divine plan as to when we're able to perceive them. And you know, part of that has to do with frequency. And, you know, you were telling me before the show started about another lovely group of people you interviewed that works with angels and how they defined angels as a frequency. So part of our challenge, they may be around us, but we may not be able to see them.
But that's to say an intelligent frequency, not just because
an intelligent.
Yeah, because vibrations and light and all that is too vague because it's all information.
It's an intelligent consciousness that vibrates at a frequency that generally we can't see because it's faster than our frequency. We're kind of in slow-mo land down here.
Turtles.
Yeah. And so most of the time, even if they're standing next to us, we might sense or feel something, but we won't generally see it. So in order for us to really feel like we've made that connection, we have to lift our frequency up. We have to raise our frequency to theirs. In emergencies, in times of great distress, they will drop their frequency down to manifest a body so that we can see them or hear them or interact with them as a human person. But they exist at a higher frequency. And this is why if we want to have more interaction with them, we ourselves have to do the inner work of moving into heart consciousness.
Yeah, and heart consciousness has a special vibe. But what's interesting is that, for instance, with entheogenic drugs, what they do is they slow the brain down. And you say, well, wait a minute. How do we get into these supernatural drug states if our mind is slowed down when these angels, you know, to see them or that, we should be speeding up. But what actually is happening is that it's the superficial nature of our brain that slows down and opens up kind of our higher brain to operate faster.
Yeah, exactly. There's four brainwave states that we know about: beta, the busy brain; alpha, which is kind of the creative mind, the meditative mind, and it does contain subconscious patterns; and theta. And theta, of course, is the deeper mind where we have much more access to who we are, including our past life records, our current blueprint, our ability to communicate with our guides, and then finally delta, which is connected with the higher mind and our soul contract. So I've been a hypnotherapist for over 30 years, and I do a lot of work with people as a clairvoyant that's done over 6,000 readings for people all around the world. And I've been put on brainwave machines. And what happens is basically, just as you said, I drop from my chatty little beta brain down into alpha and deep levels of theta and delta. Mm-hmm. So really, I'm stilling my mind, although I'm raising my frequency. I know that sounds contradictory, but...
No, but that's what I was just saying. It's basically the higher minds, that, you know, the angelic minds, let's say, are operating outside of our normal brain patterns.
You can sort of also think of, you know, part of this as that the God or the divine or Atum or Sugmat or whatever name we want to use to call the divine presence emanates out in all directions simultaneously. And as it emanates out, in the beginning was the word, the sound current that becomes the light. They call the sound now phonons. I love that in science, you know, and the phonons become the photons. It begins to create through vibration the different dimensional levels or planes. And eventually, you know, we come out to the outer, the more dense regions where we are. And so as we move up in frequency, eventually that quickness becomes infinitely isness. In other words, the quickness we can say it's beyond vibration, because it is vibrating on all frequencies at once simultaneously. It becomes beingness. Mm, so that's where the quickness becomes the stillness. It sounds like a paradox, but and maybe it is a paradox, because of course God is a paradox. But another story I talk about in this is...
Well, let me just say something about that, because I think what happens in the quickness, it's also more harmonic. And the harmonic nature of it is what creates more of the oneness.
Exactly. And angels really, you know, they have a soul body and a spiritual etheric body, but they don't have the same conflictual levels that we have. We're much more complicated, which is why a lot of times it's hard for us to find our path. You know, we have a soul body and a spiritual etheric body, but then we also have the causal body, which deals with all of our past lives, a mental body, which is a very beautiful refined instrument, but it can only do like three or four things at once. As soul body, soul perception is able to move in 360 degrees in all dimensional levels and to literally in the blink of an eye transfer, you know, encyclopedic wisdom and knowledge just like that. Okay. Where the middle body is more linear. We also have an ego, which causes us to fall into the illusion of separation. We have an emotional body. We have an astral body. And of course, we have a physical body. And just dealing with the physical body and the emotional body is a full-time job, because especially, you know, we're down here. We have to, you know, as children, we have to grow up, learn the language, learn what the societal rules are, you know, figure out how to take care of the body, take care of the emotions, interact socially, figure out a career, make a living, figure out sexuality. That's a whole nother big thing in itself. Figure out relationships and communications and finances and how to be a good parent. And I mean, it's complicated. So the angels are... they're operating from the soul body, and they don't know everything, but they know everything that they need to know about whatever their mission is, whatever their job is. Mm-hmm. And they're not conflicted. And the first angel that I ever met when I was 8 years old, you know, I was very aware. He began to teach me about what's called the great chain of being, which is how the light and sound come down through all the different dimensions and how the physical world is formed for the, like a schoolroom for the soul. So all of us down here, we're in earth school. Okay. And we're constantly being faced with the lessons and, you know, every single day, every morning we get up, we get to start again. Do we pick kindness and love, or do we pick fear, power, domination? Do we pick harmony? Do we pick division and chaos? You know, what do we choose?
Well, actually, you have a book that helps us understand our own nature that knows how to choose better.
Yes, exactly. That I think that's probably more the angelic origins of the soul.
Right.
This book, though, is a book that really addresses angels and really only angels. And I talk about the nine orders of the angels. And, you know, I've encountered these beings, and really only the bottom three orders look remotely human. Because, as you said earlier, they're conscious energy intelligences. You know, they really are. So they can take whatever form they need to, but the form is usually based on their function. And at the higher levels, when we talk about the seraphim and the cherubim and the thrones and dominions and virtues and powers, which are the first six orders.
And I like so much of your book holding this kind of information, you know, for the readers. So it's not just angelic stories, but you really create a whole understanding of the form that angels operate in, different forms.
The structure and how they're, you know, they're as present with us now as they have always been. In fact, more so, I think, because
we need them more.
Well, I think more so, and not only because we need them, but it's kind of like that story about when the first settlers came to the Americas, how the normal natives couldn't see them, but the shamans could. They could see the big clipper ship boat.
Right. They weren't used to it. And we're more aware now. We're more sophisticated.
Exactly.
We only have a couple of minutes left, and I know you're doing so much that people can participate in. You have a website, and you have all kinds of workshops and webinars. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah, my website is very simple. It's my name, TrishaMcCannon.com. I do readings for people and a lot of healing work for people. I have people flying from around the world and work with me for like a week at a time with healing, or if they're close here in Atlanta where I live, they can just come for a session and so forth. I have five books or on my website, probably about 30 DVDs and CDs. But over the last few years, I've developed seven amazing courses, entire courses for sacred stories. So you can also go to sacredstories.com. One of them's on the lost years and secret teachings of Jesus. One's on the goddess and Mary Magdalene. One's on the tree of life. One is on the galactic cycles of time and where we are right now in the evolution of our planet and solar system. But you can see them on there. And one's on spiritual alchemy. But they have, what's so cool about Sacred Stories is it lets you watch the very first module for free. And then you can go, yep, love this. This course is for me.
To me, you know, your scope of knowledge is so vast and profound that I'm sure people will jump on this. So
thank you so much.
Trisha McCannon, I love talking with you, and I'm so glad that you could be on Energy Stew. And thanks so much. And let's do another show again soon.
Oh, you too, Peter. And to all the guests out there, or all the audience out there, thank you so much for joining us. Peter's the best.
Thank you. And this is Peter at Heart River, no, at Energy Stew, but at heartriver.org, peter@heartriver.org. And I'd love to hear from you. And thanks so much for listening.